We have Representative Rieger, Representative Kopanen, myself, Max Gruenberg. We have, first of all, Doug Mertz from the Department of Law. Would you care to begin? And then we'll have Mr. Knudsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Kelso of the Department of Environmental Conservation asked me to come here and relate to you a couple of episodes that that department had with the insurance industry in 1981 and 82. These arose out of the requirement in the then fairly new law regarding oil spills, requiring oil terminal facilities and tank vessels to have proof of financial responsibility to respond to damages in oil spills, both cleanup and damages in the legal sense to any damaged party. But that law requires either insurance, surety bond guarantee, or self-insurance. And we discovered very early on in the process that after the initial spurt of availability of insurance policies, that suddenly insurers were declining to write policies. And in fact, we got outright refusals from the Water Quality Insurance Syndicate, the largest domestic group of pollution insurers, and underwriters at Lloyd's and the P&I clubs, protection and indemnity clubs, which provide either insurance or reinsurance for major tank vessels. We went through a long series of meetings with representatives of these organizations, both here and outside, trying to find out exactly what the problem was and why insurance was not being written, and they were quite frank about it. It was not so much a matter of the inherent risks as that they wanted us to change our law actually either by statute or regulation change to make certain provisions less onerous on them. And they were also insistent that they were not going to cooperate with any state liability schemes that exceeded or differed from federal pollution law. And in fact, the P&I clubs were insisting that they were not going to cooperate with any scheme of pollution liability that did not conform to international standards. Alaska, they were determined, was with five or six other states out in front in applying its own standards, and that was not going to be allowed as far as they were concerned. Shortly after that, we began to get similar protests and positions from insurers of tug and barge lines, also carrying oil to Alaska, where they were refusing to pull out of the market whatsoever and basically starve those communities here that are dependent on tug and barge oil, which basically means all of your coastal communities along Alaska's entire coast, unless we rewrote some of our critical regulations and indeed some of the statutes. Now, in one of those cases, we actually did end up, in effect, rewriting the law through an attorney general's opinion and giving them part of what they wanted. In the other case, we simply declined to withdraw from the field altogether, which is what the Water Quality Insurance Syndicate and the British organizations, the P&I clubs, and the underwriters at Lloyd's wanted. What we did eventually was to take on a major effort of trying to find insurers on our own, going out there and beating the market, beating the bushes in the market, as it were, until we finally found one or two small insurers who were willing to write policies. Once that happened, the dam burst, and all the others started writing them again. But essentially, we had an attempt that was partially successful by these groups to change Alaska's law and interpretation of its law on financial responsibility for oil spills.
Representative Rieger. Representative Rieger.
Sorry. Can you tell me, what is a P&I club?
It's short. It stands for Protection and Indemnity, or Protecting and Indemnity. It's their ancient British institutions that are, generally speaking, either large-scale insurers or reinsurers who specialize in insuring large vessels.
Is it one firm, or is it like a market?
16,
a club is a whole
15
market.
Or 16 of them. They are almost all based in England or in British possessions, but they are pretty much the major players in maritime insurance.
Representative Kopanen has a question. It's generally our policy, if members have questions while you're giving your presentation, to allow them to ask, and then you can continue so that we get the question at the right time.
I'm interested, what period did this happen? And
1981 do you have a document? And 82.
And do you have it documented? You have it documented?
We do in part. I guess the best is this report that was done for the Department of Environmental Conservation regarding the oil barge and tug difficulties. This was carried out for us by a analyst in the insurance field in Washington, D.C. It contains interviews with some of the major players on the insurance side documenting their reasons for refusing to write policies here. Now, this came out with the conclusion that that there was nothing we could do about this refusal to write policies, and that if they wanted our law changed, we'd better change it.
Mr. Chairman, I think that we'd like, copies of that for at least for this subcommittee.
Could you please provide that, sir?
And it seems to me that that's a fairly clear violation of the provisions of the Ferguson-McCarran Act, which, while allowing insurance companies certain exemptions from the Antitrust Act, does not exempt them from liability for actions such as were undertaken here.
Is that your opinion, too, or do you have a legal opinion on that?
I'm an expert in oil spills, not insurance and not antitrust. I really do not know.
Have you spoken with Paul Roller and or Dick Monkman about this factual situation you have relayed to us on the record here?
I have briefly mentioned it to Dick Monkman, but without really discussing whether it is a violation.
I would like you to do that. I think that is most important. I think the information you are providing would be of great interest to the other attorneys general involved in that lawsuit. Would you do that?
I will.
Thank you. Please continue.
That is all I have.
Other questions? Representative Brown? Representative Kopanen? Representative Rieger? Fine. We appreciate this very much, and the information that you have provided to us today sounds like the similar information the press has reported in other states. And when you indicated that this type of activity would, and I use your word, quote, starve, unquote, coastal communities, was that information relayed to those municipalities?
No, because frankly, we never believed that they would stick with the threat. Indeed, we were able to get them to write insurance in the end.
Do you, may I ask you, do you have written proof of that threat?
Indirect, in that this report does quote the frank positions of the industry to supplying insurance and the resulting effect on the oil barge and tug industry here.
Thank you. By the way, in my opinion, having this additional evidence would assist in that lawsuit and would be a reason why we should participate, as opposed to simply filing a friend of the court brief. And the information you have provided today is, I think, exceedingly important. Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one question after all. In these transactions where you're trying to get the P&I insurance, or a firm was, is that a domestic transaction, or is that an international transaction?
It is normally carried out from the point of view of the entity being insured. It's normally carried out as a domestic one through a domestic broker. They don't actually make contact with the P&I club or the underwriters at Lloyd's independently over there. They just work through an American broker.
Okay, I guess what I'm trying to focus on, because of a comment made the other day, is would, when you're trying to trace back to the I guess you'd call it collusive behavior or whatever the term would be, is that behavior occurring outside the boundaries of the United States or within? That's, I guess, what I'm trying to get to.
Well, I suspect that we have a situation here where if there is some sort of collusion or joint communication, joint taking of positions or whatever by the British-based entities, it probably happens in Britain, whereas the Water Quality Insurance Syndicate and the other domestic insurance companies are very much domestic companies.
Thank you.
It sounds to me like it's occurring both nationally and internationally. It's part of the same action. Some of it's out of the country and some of it's in. Is that your understanding?
Yes.
Other questions? Yes, Mr. Mertz.
I did have one other comment. At the time we were dealing with the domestic insurers, they pointed out as part of their show of their ability to put us in an uncomfortable position that Florida had a very far-reaching oil pollution law. They made similar threats to Florida that they would basically dry up the availability of oil on the market, and they said that Florida caved in and changed the law. I don't know what Florida did or not. We never really confirmed that.
The last 3 days, the legislature has passed two laws concerning pollution, and you're aware of both of them. One is the Lien Law, and the other has to do with making the owners, as well as the actual polluters, responsible under a theory of strict liability. Has any insurer contacted you, making a threat if we pass these new laws that they will pull out of the market?
No.
Do you anticipate that any such threats would occur or anything would occur as a result of these two new laws, which a number of us strongly support?
I think it really depends on how we enforce them. My opinion has been all along that most of the things we would be able to do under the strengthened liability law, House Bill 459, we could probably do under the common law anyway, although we'd have to wade through a whole lot of defenses to get a court judgment that way. Insurance carriers are well aware of that and well aware of the problems of writing that kind of insurance and the pitfalls. A lot of whether they should be concerned or not really comes down to how we interpret it and how we enforce it. So I suspect they will be looking at that rather than at the actual terms of the statute itself.
Thank you. By the way, I'd like to note the presence of Representative Brown, who's been here since pretty much the beginning of the meeting. Thank you very much, sir. If we have further questions, we may call you back at some point. Next, we have Mr. Harlan R. Knudsen, representing the Health Association of Alaska. Welcome, and we very much appreciate your willingness to testify, sir.
Thank you very much. The Health Association of Alaska represents hospitals and nursing homes, and I'd like to make briefly, knowing how busy you are, just 3 points. Number one, I wish we had the wisdom to tell you that the suit was correct and that you should move forward, but that we want you to know that you have our support, and we would certainly urge the insurance industry to come forth and give you as much information. And we wish you well on your investigation of the insurance industry. We would like to add the suggestion, because across the country, and when I came up from the state of Washington, was involved with the so-called captive, physician captive and hospital captive insurance companies have also gone through the dilemma of what's going on. And I would urge you to involve those folks in our own insurance company here, MICA, in your deliberations, because they are supposedly created on a nonprofit basis and supposedly have all the information. And I would think that a comparison of those two companies may help us try to get the hard facts on what's driving the system. The next point that I'd like to make is, you know, this problem has been with us 10 or 15 years, and it's still with us, and I just couldn't resist the opportunity to file with the committee the latest information on the cost and what's happening here in the state of Alaska. During the past 2 years, we've seen a $2 million increase in liability premiums for hospitals and long-term care facilities. Terribly frustrating. And we share that with you. There's legislation pending before the legislature on these issues. We wish we could say we had an answer, and we don't, but we want to offer you our support.
Anything else you care to add
before
I open it up for questions? Are there questions? Representative Kopanen.
Just a comment, knowing some of the history of MISA and its other competitors. The major cost, more about 60% of the premium cost, I believe, is reinsurance, so that what you heard affects MICA too. And the problem, of course, is to be able to do accurate actuarial or epidemiological studies, you need a certain base number, which is in excess of, I think, 380 or three. And no insurer. There are only about 400 odd doctors, and if the since the market is split up, there's no good way to forecast the numbers. So that was one of the reasons to make MICA originally a blanket agency, but that was opposed by the physicians, and after 2 years it was changed, and since then there's no good way of forecasting how the pool will operate. But in any case, it's the reinsurance cost that seems to be driving everything, and it would speak right into what the other gentleman was saying.
Thank you. Thank you.
Representative Rieger, any questions?
No, just, there's a real concern. I look at the neighborhood health center and see that their insurance premium is going up. I think we shouldn't lose sight. I mean, I think that this is an important thing to look into, but I also, when we get into the health care side of it, I'm reminded of the suit that was, I guess, finally settled last fall. I believe the name was Jackson versus Power, where I think that part of the problem is our Supreme Court too, and I think that they're continually finding new ways to find our health care providers responsible for everything. And I think that this has to be a two-front attack on trying to contain our insurance costs. Because, I mean, I think if I were going to hold myself out to hold someone harmless, you know, I'd kind of want to know what I was holding harmless for. And that suit last fall really kind of alarmed me, and what I saw our own legal system doing. Thank you.
Representative Brown, did you have a question? I'd like to note the presence of Representative Navarre, and you have a question, sir.
Are we on telecom?
Yes, we are.
Okay, I just want to comment on these charts here. There's a chance.
By the way, excuse me, I note the presence of a quorum of the committee.
There's a chance that, in fact, a pretty good likelihood that some of these numbers on the increase in costs are misleading, because in a lot of cases, when the numbers have, in some cases, the numbers have gone down or remained about the same or only seen small increases, it is also due to a lessening of the coverage, a reduction in the amount of dollar coverage in some of the policies. So even though, I mean, I don't think this is an accurate very accurate reflection of the actual increases.
Would you care to comment, sir?
Increases not high enough or too low?
I think it's misleadingly low.
Thank you.
I would be grateful if it would be possible for you to make any adjustment or to indicate in footnotes or something on this sheet whether the policy payments went down, but the coverage also went down in some of these cases. I think that Representative Navarre's point is a crucial one, and for us to be able to make any valid comparison, we would need to know the other side of the coin. What are you buying for the same amount of money?
That's a good question. We'd be delighted to compare the premium with the coverage. And just what are we buying? And be happy to do that and share it back with you.
I note Mr. Monkman is here, and Would you like to get that copies of that information, too? Would you like him to provide that to you?
I certainly would, Representative.
Why don't you come up so we can get you on the record and... so that the people on telecon, we're asking Mr. Monkman, just pull up a second chair, you both can sit there, and that way the people on teleconference can know who is talking, and the tape recorder will know who is talking also. Please identify yourself, sir.
For the record, I'm Richard Monkman with the Department of Law.
Yeah, you're on. No, up. There you go.
Representative DeVar's question went right to the heart of the issue in the antitrust lawsuit. The problem that's alleged in the lawsuit is not so much that premiums have gone up, although that is alleged to have also occurred, but that availability of insurance has gone down. That is, the types of policies that are issued provide less coverage. The scope of the types of incidents that are covered have been narrowed. And then the scope of time to make claims, time coverage of the policies has also been limited. So that, I think, was a good point. The insurance premiums here may indeed seem to be going up by just a certain amount. If you compared what the cost would have been for the same type of coverage those hospitals were getting a couple of years ago, the figures might be different.
Fine. Does that lead to any questions by any member of the committee? Representative Navarre, Representative Brown, Representative Rieger. Okay. You were here when Mr. Mertz testified also, were you not? Do you have any comments or anything you wish to add as a result of either his testimony or Mr. Knudsen's testimony?
Nothing really. I was certainly interested to hear from Mr. Mertz yesterday about the situation that occurred back two, I guess. Certainly seems to fit into this pattern. I would say that the statute of limitations has probably run for those particular incidents, but looking at that as part of the pattern practice, we certainly
even though you could not maintain a cause of action, that certainly it would be evidence that's admissible to show the continuity of their continuing course of action, allegedly, would it not?
It certainly could be, yes.
Fine. And I would appreciate it if you would cooperate in so that you have as much information as possible when you make your presentation to the Attorney General and the Governor. And by the way, we will distribute, I note the Daily News has had an editorial on the subject a couple of days ago, and the Juno Empire did earlier, too, and I'll pass that around. Is there any other question for any of the three witnesses today? If not, we thank you all very much. Let me just very briefly, before we adjourn, discuss the future activities. We basically have a number of bills that are circulating now, and let me ask you, do the subcommittees have other bills before them, other Senate bills that you haven't reported out to the full committee? Representative Brown and Rieger?
We aren't on teleconference anymore.
Yeah, we still are, officially.
Mr. Chairman, I think that most of the ones that the committee intends to report out have been reported out. There are a couple that are in there that could spring to life, but I don't expect them to. I know that I had drafted two bills which would prevent the HOF program and the mobile home program from applying to new construction after January or July 1 of this year to try to phase those programs out, but I think that some sympathy of the committee wasn't with those bills. Although I still personally believe in them. I don't know if there were other bills that were drafted and not reported out, maybe Representative Brown.
Representative Pershaw had a resolution drafted on owner occupancy issue in condominiums. There are some other things, but I think there's been so much going on in the last week or so that we really haven't had time to focus on it. But we're very interested in seeing some of the bills that we have introduced move along, and I think we're putting our energy on trying to accomplish passage of those bills that we have introduced.
Representative Navarre. Okay. Yes, Representative Rieger.
I just wanted to remind you also, last Friday in our meeting, I think we did not report out the second of those two bills recommended by AEDC, which was on the...
Utilities.
utility rate relief, and I think that we should still should.
They haven't gotten us a new draft yet, have they?
No, they have asked to delay
This is Tom Begich.
AEDC has asked to delay until Tuesday. I spoke with them yesterday and again the day before that, and they're working with APUC on drafting the changes to that, as they said that they would. They've met already once, and they're hoping to have one. Scott Hawkins conveyed to me that he's hoping to have one available by the beginning of next week for possibly a Tuesday meeting, though I'm not quite sure when we'll have that meeting.
Okay.
I'm looking at schedules now.
Okay. When we get that, we'll distribute that to members of the committee and have a meeting and discuss that. We're really then on the second phase, which is moving the bills along that we have put in. And I know that Labor and Commerce and other committees are having a series of hearings on our bills now. And I know that the staff has been coordinating that and will continue to coordinate that with the representatives. It is my intent to make certain that we have essentially a bill manager for each bill, and that person would be the point person to be the representative to be certain that the bill makes it through the House, and we will assist and coordinate with you. Is that plan of action agreeable with the other members of the committee?
Sure.
Hearing no objection, that's what we will do. We also, on this insurance matter, we have literally been meeting on pretty much a daily basis with the Division of Insurance people and have been in contact. We are, at the present time, still determining the best actual method of pursuing this. And we have drafted a potential joint letter. We're also considering a House resolution. And I should be able to make a report to you individually either today or this weekend or at the beginning of next week. This is a draft of the joint letter. I'm not yet prepared to say that this is what my recommendation will be, but I'm just now giving you an idea of what we are doing. And also, we are taking a look at a resolution similar in form in some manners, but some differences with House Joint Resolution 25, which we passed last year, and also some potential legislation. But we're not far enough along for me to make any further report, but I will certainly bring that to you individually. Any questions or comments before we adjourn? Hearing none, is there anything else to come before the meeting at this time? If not, the time is 8:39, and we thank you all. The meeting is adjourned.